Hawks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
And welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning. Text line, you want to be in touch with the program, 251-343-0106. That's how you interact with the show. Coming up on today's show, we'll kick it off with Jay Mitchell here in just a moment. He's running for Attorney General, but also on the program, Barry Moore. That's in about a half hour. He's candidate for United States Senate. Our Thursday regular April Marie Fogle, because you never can have enough April Marie Fogle on the airwaves at FM Talk 106.5. She'll be at the 10 o'clock hour. And then my buddy Sam Roberts from the Coleman Daily, running these tracking polls. And we'll just kind of get his input on where these races are and what the trends are in this upcoming midterm coming up on Tuesday. Once again, text line 251-343-0106 if you need to be in touch with the program. Joining us here at the Fairhope Bureau, and we're testing some gear here, but Jay Mitchell, former Alabama Supreme Court Justice here. Jay, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jeff. Dragging a little bit this morning. I stayed up past my bedtime watching the end of that Knicks-Spurs game last night. Doing great.
I guess that it's a special occasion, you know, historic event. You're allowed. Yeah. Well, tell us, how's the campaign going?
It's going great, getting all around the state. We are 5 days away from the runoff, as your listeners know, and so just really trying to pop up in all the right parts of the state to remind everybody it's important to go vote on Tuesday and to encourage them to go vote for me for Attorney General.
Well, I guess we kind of hit some of the things we hit Monday night, I guess. First off, a lot of us be paying attention to the redistricting. You get elected Attorney General, considers a new phase. You feel good about where we are. The Supreme Court seems to have really sent a strong, clear message to the lower courts, but we still got to go through the formalities and the processes.
Right. Well, my hope is that as we've moved beyond this year, we'll have an opportunity for the legislature to come back in and draw new maps that will allow Alabama to send 7 House Republicans to Washington. We've seen really, even in recent days, just how razor thin the margin is for Republicans in the U.S. House. President Trump needs all the reinforcements he can get, and we need to maximize the opportunities we have here in Alabama.
Well, that one's to be continued. Something you and your opponent, Katherine Robertson, really talked about, even I have a hard time kind of comprehending the back and forth here, and I follow this every day. But you guys have been kind of exchanging barbs back and forth about the dark money, quote unquote, and who's taking money from who. And can you kind of walk us through that? And why do you think this is important at this stage of this campaign?
Well, it's important because, number one, the voters of Alabama deserve transparency about who's supporting each of the candidates in the race. And that's the whole purpose of why we had the Fair Campaign Practices Act here in Alabama, is to make sure that candidates and those participating in the political process seeking to influence our elections disclose all of that. And the reason it's important is because, look, let's be real. You're going to dance with the one who brought you. And if there are a lot of people pouring money into one of our campaigns and it's not being disclosed properly, it deprives voters of that information to know exactly who Jay or his opponent might be picking up the phone and answering calls from once they're Attorney General. The contrast here is very clear. Look, we got to go raise money to get these ads up on the radio, up on TV.
Right.
That's just a practicality here. 97% of the dollars I've raised in this race are from right here in Alabama. It's individuals, it's families, it's businesses. And it's 100% disclosed with the Secretary of State's office. Any voter out there can go and look up who's given to me and who's supporting me. And I think that's important information for voters to have. By contrast, my opponent, I believe it's over $3 million in dark money is supporting her campaign. That's the vast majority of the dollars that have been raised there. And, you know, they try to put a DBA, a storefront name. Oh, it's maybe this group or that group. But it's missing the important piece, which is who's putting money into that group, into this new 501c4 shell company that's being used. I think the voters of Alabama deserve to know who is funding each of our campaigns. And these dark money shell company, shell entities are being used to skirt around Alabama campaign disclosure law. And I think that's a problem.
Well, and we saw it, I guess, in the primary with some of these legislative races. But that's something that maybe, obviously, you're not going to get any kind of solution or any kind of remedy in the short term. But in the long term, kind of a lesson we need to learn from this campaign cycle?
Yeah, I think so. You know, State Senator Arthur Orr from Decatur has proposed a bill, certainly last session, maybe the last couple of sessions, that hadn't gone anywhere. That would really close that loophole. I think after this election cycle, we've seen a ton of dark money come in from D.C. and out of state, trying to influence all kinds of races, most of all the attorney general's race. And so there may be a growing appetite to do something legislatively to close that up.
Yeah, well,
I would support that.
It's come up a lot. Let's talk about some other things. I guess as attorney general, I mean, you're the chief law enforcement officer. We've had crime problems in our big metropolitan areas, you know, and there's talk about what to do about it. And what we're finding is, and maybe Mobile to some degree, but more so like a Montgomery and a Birmingham. And I know they have these crime suppression units and the state's really chipping in here. But at what point do you hold these localities responsible for their own safe streets that the state has to chip in? It's the burden on everybody across the entire state to police Montgomery, Alabama. What are we getting out of it? Why can't they do it themselves?
Well, I think you summarized that very aptly. The problems we have with violent crime in Alabama are primarily centered in our blue cities. And Montgomery and Birmingham in recent years have been the two poster children for that. Birmingham's reversed some things in the last year. They're getting more police officers in. We got to make sure that that turns into a trend line and is sustained in a way that will really allow the citizens of Birmingham and the surrounding areas to be protected. But Montgomery continues to be a real problem. And what we've seen there is we've seen terrible failed leadership
right
from the Blue City mayor, running soft on crime policies, not backing up their law enforcement officers when the going gets tough. And as a result, you've seen recruitment and retention of police officers in the Montgomery Police Department fall off a cliff. And it's a major problem. You know, approximate cause of that, and we've been bringing awareness of this in our campaign, was the prosecution of Officer Cody Smith, former Montgomery police officer who was out patrolling a very dangerous district of Montgomery about 10 years ago, had to apprehend a guy who fit the description of a dangerous suspect. Guy got away from him. Cody followed his training, had to shoot the guy. Ultimately, the guy died. Cody was prosecuted for that. Was prosecuted, convicted, sent to limestone prison. My opponent was part of the effort to keep him in prison. And that case came to my court, to the Alabama Supreme Court, when I was a justice there. I ended up writing an opinion. We couldn't give him the relief he was seeking at the time because of procedural reasons. But I wrote an opinion saying, hey, based on my review of the undisputed facts here, there's no way this guy ever should have been prosecuted, much less convicted. This was post-Ferguson. A lot of stuff in the atmosphere here. But after my opinion came out, the AG's office did a 180, went and pleaded him out of prison for time served. And he had the opportunity to come home to his family. But here's why I point this out to your listeners. Number one, he never should have been prosecuted. And the fact that my opponent was part of making him plead to a felony to come out of prison, that's a terrible injustice. But the other reason I pointed out, Montgomery police officer ranks were around 600 when Cody was patrolling. After his prosecution and conviction, recruitment and retention fell off a cliff. And they're around 200 today, if you're believing the numbers coming out of Montgomery. And so you've lost police presence in Montgomery, which has made the streets much more dangerous. And obviously it becomes a real burden to deterring violent crime as well. So we in state government, if the Blue Cities can't get it together, we're going to have to step in and do more. Coach has talked about potentially sending in the National Guard to Montgomery.
Right.
I would support that. I think we can do it in a way that's strategic and precise and would help the people of that city and help those of us who live around those areas as well.
Well, how do you find that right balance, though? So there are clearly abuses within law enforcement, and they do need to be held accountable for what they do. You know, and I know that every sort of one of these stories is very unique and different, you know, in its circumstances. But at what point, I mean, finding that right balance and holding bad policing accountable versus not giving in to the mob and the politics of the day, that there's there's a balance that we're always trying to achieve, but we never quite get there, and it seems it's kind of drowned out because of politics.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt there can be a bad apple in every bushel, right? You can have a bad police officer who doesn't do it right. So, that, you know, there needs to be accountability there. That's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about police officers who are having to make tough split-second decisions and apprehending dangerous suspects, following the law, following their training, and then because of politics, because of something other than the law, being prosecuted and potentially convicted for that. One thing I'm going to do, Jeff, when I'm Attorney General, we are going to form what I'm calling the critical incident assessment team. Whenever there's a deadly officer-involved shooting like we saw in Montgomery with Officer Cody Smith, I'm not going to put my head in the sand on that. Right. I want to make sure that I, as Attorney General, am briefed early about that. I'm going to bring together a team of seasoned, excellent law enforcement leaders to look at the dash cam, look at the body cam, look at other applicable evidence, hold that up to the law and to the training standards that our peace officers are required to follow, and then advise me about what needs to happen here. We've got great DAs across the state who do great work, follow the law, and we need to trust our DAs to continue to do the great work that they're doing. But what I want to make sure is if there's anything other than the law being the consideration, I want to get more directly involved on the front end of that, not wait till the back end of that.
Joined by Jay Mitchell. He's former Alabama Supreme Court Justice, running for Attorney General here in Alabama next Tuesday. He's in a runoff with Catherine Robertson. Jay, the other thing, and there is a chance, and you said you think that we'll get a Republican in 28, but if we don't, you know, it's going to be on guard, you know, federal overreach. And how much would a Democrat administration try to come in, roll back what Donald Trump has done, but in a punitive manner toward this state, things that the legislature does, that, you know, whatever Democrat administration, the DOJ, it comes after to the state. Is that something that we really got to be thinking about, I think, going forward as it pertains to your office if elected?
Well, as I said at the debate the other night, my belief is that the best defense is a good offense. And so what we've got to do in the remaining 2 years that President Trump will be in office, unless we can figure out a way to keep him there longer, we've got to make sure we go on offense with the president and with soon-to-be Governor Tuberville to make sure that we're moving the baseline at the national level.
Right.
So that if a Democrat did get elected in 2028 or sometime soon thereafter, they're starting from much further back. It's much more difficult through the bureaucracy, through the courts, for them to do things in a way that would be oppressive to states like Alabama. So I think it's really important that we have an AG coming in with the right mentality, the right attitude, so that we can really maximize our opportunities in the last 2 years of the Trump 2 administration. Beyond that, look, it's going to be, if we have a Democrat in 2028 taking the oath of office in 2029, it's going to be a war. And what Alabama is going to need is that they're going to need a courtroom warrior to take on those fights. I'm the only candidate in this runoff who has real courtroom experience. I spent 16 years in front of judges and juries, was consistently ranked as one of the top courtroom lawyers in Alabama and in the United States. I spent 6.5 years as a justice on our state's highest court. We got to make sure we have somebody as our next AG who has real, actual courtroom experience and can go to war for the people of Alabama and be on offense for our values and our way of life.
Let's get a quick break in here. We're joined by Jay Mitchell. He's a candidate for Attorney General. 251-343-0106. Hit us up on that text line. We'll get to those at some point during the show. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Counting flowers on the wall, that don't bother me at all. Playing solitaire till dawn with the deck of 51. Smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Now don't tell me I've nothing.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning. Text line, you want to be in touch with me, 251-343-0106. That's how you do so. So the Cub bearing more coming up in the next segment, so stick around for that. But with us for just a few more minutes here, candidate for Attorney General Jay Mitchell. Jay, one of the big parts of this cycle, well, whenever you poll it, it shows up in a profound way, people are still very concerned about immigration. Donald Trump's done a good job at the border, but what you find is, especially in some places in these blue states, that the fight is like not cooperating with federal law enforcement on immigration. But in Alabama, I assume that would be a priority for you if elected attorney general.
Yeah, no doubt. Illegal immigration is a big component of the crime problem that we have in pockets of Alabama. And so we got to make sure we are apprehending illegals, turning them over for deportation. What I'm going to do is I'm going to make that a priority when I'm attorney general. We got to make sure that we are standing with President Trump, standing with ICE, and working cooperatively with ICE. What I have found and what I've experienced is there's really a patchwork across our state, as there is in other red states. You have some law enforcement leaders working very well with the Trump administration, entering into these MOU agreements to cooperate there.
Right.
And you have other law enforcement folks, leaders, and mainly in blue cities, blue jurisdictions, that are just hiding out from it and not doing it. They had a similar problem in Texas in recent years, and the legislature in Texas passed a law saying it's no longer optional for their sheriffs out there to cooperate with ICE. It makes it, they require their law enforcement leaders out there to cooperate with ICE. And they can pick different versions of what those agreements might look like depending on their operations. But there is a requirement there. And so what I want to do when I come into office, I want to quarterback that effort. I can't think of a better role for the AG to play than working closely with our law enforcement leaders across the state to make sure that we are cracking down on illegal immigration, and we're doing it in a seamless way. Not that we have this kind of patchy, some areas are doing well, some areas aren't doing well with that. We need to make sure that we've got seamless enforcement of illegal immigration and seamless cooperation with President Trump and ICE.
Last question, we'll get you out of here on this. Central focus of your campaign, and we've seen the ads, Al Akbar, your butt back to the Middle East, radical Islam. Why at this moment, why now, why is that important for you to highlight?
We need to, our leaders need to be sounding the alarm on radical Islam. It's not just an up there in Dearborn, Michigan, or Minneapolis problem. It's not just an over there problem in Western Europe. We're looking at a growing problem with radical Islam, even in our surrounding sister southern states. You know, back in March, right before we ran that ad, we had a rash of radical Islamic terrorist events here. We had the guy shooting up the bar in Austin, Texas, the guy attacking the Army ROTC unit in Virginia, the guy ramming his car into the synagogue in Michigan, guy throwing the IED over the fence at the mayor's mansion in New York. So we've really got to be paying careful attention to this. We've seen in Texas, we've seen in Florida, we're even seeing in Georgia the very rapid development of Islamic centers. And we got to make sure, of course, you know, if you're a Muslim, you're here lawfully, you're here peaceably, no problem. But we got to make sure that the conditions aren't being created in Alabama where radical Islam can take root. And I've actually put out a plan about this. It's not just me saying something. We've actually put substantive policy behind it. And a couple of big things there. Number one, we got to make sure that our prohibition on Sharia law here in Alabama is not being circumvented. We see in Texas, they have a similar prohibition. A.G. Paxton, Ken Paxton there, has figured out there have been some efforts to try to get around that prohibition. So we got to make sure that doesn't happen in Alabama. And then, like Texas and Florida, I would be in favor of passing a law that would allow Alabama to designate domestic terror organizations. And I would be in favor right away of designating the Muslim Brotherhood, the Council on American Islamic Relations, Students for Justice in Palestine, which has done a lot of rabble-rousing anti-Semitic protests on campus. We need to make sure we don't have our heads buried in the sand on this. I'm thankful for the way Coach Tuberville's been sounding the alarm on this and other state leaders. We got to have an attorney general in this next season of state government who's going to have his eye on the problem.
Well, we're about to get out of here, but before we do, folks want to find out more about your campaign and want to get in touch with you. How can they do so?
Yeah, love for you to go to our campaign website. It's jayforalabama.com. That's jayforalabama.com. We're on Facebook and the other social media sites. We'd love you to come along and follow with us. Hey, very important election here is in 5 days. Need your listeners to go out and vote in the Republican runoff, and I would respectfully ask for their vote for Jay Mitchell for Alabama Attorney General.
All right. Y'all go check that out. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Anger cannonball. Now, walls of history are cold and still, but they still smell the powder burning, and they probably always will. And on the old town square, under the barbershop pole, they set me up in the chair. To the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. Once again, text line 251-343-0106. April Marie Fogel from 1819 News coming up in about an hour. And then Sam Roberts from the Coleman Daily. We'll talk some trends in this election cycle coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Joining us now on the line, he's a candidate for United States Senate. Here from his opponent yesterday here on the program. But today we got Barry Moore, my congressman in the 1st Congressional District. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Jeff, we are doing good. Great to be with you.
Hey, thanks for making time for us. Well, give us kind of a rundown. I know you've been up in D.C. Duty calls, but how's the campaign going otherwise?
Going good. We're hearing great things, and we're in a good spot. Just actually, we're doing a tele-rally tonight with the president throughout Alabama. So tell all your listeners at 5:30, if they get a call, it's going to be President Trump and myself getting on the call. So just remind everybody to get out and vote.
Well, how do you think you're looking right now? I mean, like I said, you and I are talking offline, but the polling is all over the place. But, I, the one poll that I guess counted, and it's been, a few weeks, but May 19th, you look pretty stout, but how are you feeling today?
Yeah, so we're in a good spot, and we look at our polling as actually information. It's not a messaging thing. We actually want to know where we're at in the race and how things look, and we think we're in a good spot. The high propensity voters, we're way ahead with those. That's the four out of four voters, and those are the people that vote in runoffs and primaries, and we're way ahead with the Trump people in Alabama. So we think we're in a good spot. And like I said, the president and I will be calling around encouraging everybody to show up and vote here on Tuesday.
Well, I'll talk a little bit here. I guess we'll start here with some policy stuff. But you're up there. What's the feeling about the direction the president's going with Iran? They seem to be kind of escalating. The ceasefire seems off. But, or where do you think we are in terms of like kind of getting this settled?
Well, it sounds like the president's starting to actually make some moves on Iran. He's starting to hit some of the more valuable assets to the regime, it sounds like, over the last couple of days. And I think he's sending a message, you get to the table. We'll open the strait, but you're going to have to suspend your nuclear the enrichment, those sort of things. Just no nuclear weapons. And that's difficult to get that regime to agree to, but I think he continues to apply the pressure. And I'd love to see us get a solution out there. And I know the president would, too. He's working in that direction. But you're dealing with kind of an apocalyptic crowd over there. They're tough sometimes. And sometimes the only thing they understand is force. And so he may force them to the table through force.
Well, and so that being the case, I mean, that's what it sounds like it's going to take. We've done this kind of cat and mouse game, whack-a-mole, or whatever you want to call it. And we're just not really getting anywhere. We've given them ample opportunity to come to some kind of an agreement here. And here we are, 3 months into this thing and still at this like kind of negotiating phase.
Yeah, it does. And it's unfortunate. I know, like I said, I know the president would like to get a resolution, and I think he's doing what's needed to be done. I mean, he's offering him a couple of opportunities, and I think he'll continue to apply pressure with sanctions and military force as needed. And till they come to their senses, if that's a possibility in that part of the world.
Talk to us a little bit about what went on these last couple of days with reconciliation. What do we need to know there? Obviously, it was a very close vote. You had to be in D.C. Walk us through that.
Yeah, so Monday night we flew in, did a two vote. That was just on some fraud stuff, but it gave us a head count. Who was here? Because you got people that are out sick. You got people that may have had a death in the family. So we voted Monday night. As a procedural vote to check, kind of get a bed count, as we like to say, or a head count. And then we left there, went over the House Freedom Caucus, and we met with the speaker on reconciliation. We come to an agreement, and we funded DHS on Tuesday. So that's 12 of the 12 approach deals, first time in three decades. And DHS is actually funded through the end of President Trump's term.
So you feel good about it, and it's at least we're not going to see any kind of any hijinks. Who knows what's going to happen in November in the entirety of the House and the Senate, but that this is sitting until we get a new president.
That's right. On CBP and ICE, it's set. And President Trump asked us to do that to make sure he could finish what he had told the American people he would do, was to clean up the mess that Biden did, they created with the border wide open. And so he's got his funding, he's got his resources. Mark Lane Mullen was really needing that. So we got that done because he'd been telling us he really needed funding to keep doing what they needed to do to make sure that we supported law enforcement. So I think the president's pleased with it. We're certainly glad to get it across the finish line.
Yeah, and, you know, they've had some bumps in the road with DHS, but with Mark Wayne Mullen as a secretary, he's had some time to kind of get ingratiated with the job and knowing what the expectations are. But that seems to be, among Republicans, in a much better place maybe than it was a year ago.
Yeah, I think he's managing it well. And actually, I've been told that he really is enjoying the job. So he's doing a job that he's good at, and he seems to be enjoying the job. So I think he was a good pick, and I think we're moving in the right direction with DHS and Homeland.
I'm joined by Congressman Barry Moore. He's a candidate for U.S. Senate here in Alabama. Look, it's come up. We're going to bring it up here, and I'm going to let you. And my understanding is you have a very, very good explanation that a lot of our listeners probably aren't getting on this veteran stuff, that you were actually in the National Guard. Then you, I guess, was an ROTC program at Auburn or something that you got into after that, but kind of walk us through that. And I know this is like a manufactured controversy, but walk us through where you are on the whole veteran discussion.
Yeah. So we actually, I went through basic training just like any, I joined the Guard. I was at the junior college in Enterprise, went through basic training as a private. And when I transferred up to Auburn, I was still drilling with my unit and I had an opportunity to get an ROTC program. And so I joined the ROTC program. So then I started driving from Auburn as a student over drilling as a cadet over at the unit in Montgomery. And so I was hoping to go to flight school at some point, and getting a commission through that program at ROTC made sense. And so I transitioned and did my time in, and, you know, I'm proud of that. I'm proud of the unit I was in. It was a heck of a unit, a lot of great experienced pilots in that unit. And, you know, for me, it was an honor to serve, and we did our time and served our commitment out. And we obviously are proud of that.
Well, and I'll just ask you, because I asked your opponent yesterday, you believe that you are technical or whatever definition, legal definition, that you are a veteran.
Yeah, you have two. There's two components to be a veteran, if you look at it. Number one, you have to serve on active duty, which basic training was active duty. Secondly, you have to be honorably discharged. I was honorably discharged. And so I absolutely fit the requirements, if you look at the Veterans Administration, for a veteran.
Well, and the other thing that comes up is the DD-214. Now, why you don't or aren't able to produce one of those, what's the circumstances there?
Yeah, so a lot of National Guard and reservists, they get an NG-22. And so you won't get a 214 unless you're deployed over a period of time. And I think if you're injured when you're deployed, you might get a DD-214. But Guard and Reserve, I've talked to so many of them. Matter of fact, my dad was an 03 captain in the Guard. He doesn't think he has a DD-214. He served 14 years. And I talked to a retired guardsman, had over 34 years. He didn't have one. And so if you don't deploy and you don't do consistent active service, I think it's 90 days, then, and basic's not that long. And so you won't have, Guard and Reservemen will not have a DD-214. And anybody who knows much about the military should be aware of that.
Barry Moore with us here on the program. So let's talk about this, kind of shifting gears here, this campaign and the statewide election. Now, you're obviously very strong in the Wiregrass, and I think there's plenty of polling to back that up. But talk about running statewide. What are you hearing from people out there? Is it immigration still, or are there other things that are coming up, gas prices and inflation and things like that?
Yeah, affordability is an issue. And then, look, we inherited that from 4 years of the Biden administration. But, of course, Iran, the fuel costs are a problem. So we want to try, like I said, I think between now and November, we need to get a good resolution out of Iran. We need to get fuel prices down. That's a concern. I think most of everybody else is, everybody's pretty pleased with what the president's doing on the border. They're pleased with, I think, our progress of getting the 12 approach bills done to do away with CR. So, You know, but out there, I think, you know, most of the people I talked to are pretty pleased with the job the president's doing. Obviously, inflation and cost are, you know, gas prices are a problem. But I think he's doing a difficult thing so many people have promised to do, Jeff. They just, decades we've had presidents say, yeah, we're going to, you know, Iran can't have a nuke. And it's tough in an election cycle, but that's leadership. When you go out and do what has to be done and you don't worry about the politics of it, but you do it for the policy part of it, you make sure that you do what you tell people you're going to do and you try to protect the American people and our allies. And so, yeah, I mean, I think most of my people are like, we're willing to pay higher gas prices in the short term if our kids can live in a future and grandkids without a nuclear Iran.
Yeah, and I mean, getting this wound down, though, once this is settled, it seems like that gas price question and the oil price per barrel will resolve itself.
I think you're right. And I think because we're increased production, drilling here, drilling now, we sped up the regulatory, the permitting process. We're working on a new refinery in Texas, and we've got some assets I think we're going to be able to use out of Venezuela. I think over time, Jeff, you'll see those prices come down. If you look at Trump's first term, he bought them pretty darn low, and they were really low, lower than Biden most of the time until this thing in Iran. And if we land the plane in Iran and if we can get the strait opened, I think we're in a good spot on future prices for oil and gas.
Congressman, something else is more related to your congressional, I guess, service, but are your I guess, politics. But we are kind of under a new map, a new congressional map. And you and, I mean, I was there, you and Congressman Garl running against each other in that last AL1 skirmish. But here we now have the Supreme Court that has cleared the way for Alabama to go back to what I think is more in line with the old map, the map we've been with since in the early 1990s. Just your reaction to what the high court has done and getting back to kind of that framework.
Yeah, I think it's a step in the right direction. You know, obviously, I think we need to push for a 7-0 map because the blue states are doing it, and then we're being punished in D.C. as a result. And the Dems have a big head start of us, a start on us with all this, you know, gerrymandering and redistricting over the last 2 or 3 decades. And Eric Holder sued all the red states. He didn't sue any of the blue states. And so the red states are, you know, they've been under the gun with the courts, but thank goodness, I think it's opened up an opportunity for us to do it by the Constitution and actually allow the legislature to start drawing our districts. So I'm real pleased with the Supreme Court ruling, and I think it's a step in the right direction for the future of the country and certainly for the state of Alabama.
So you think a 7-0 map ought to be something the state of Alabama really takes head on in the future?
Absolutely. I mean, you look up the Northeast coast, there's 9 states that Trump got 37-48% of the vote in 9 different states, and there's not a single Republican from one of those states. And so they're going to continue to do what they've been doing, and we've got to play offense in the red states where we have opportunities.
Well, and so, I mean, you look at it, and I'm not convinced we're not completely out of the woods yet, but like, this is like the Alabama version of lawfare. We still have like a federal judge problem trying to butt heads with this administration.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. A lot of these federal judges and a lot of the judges that come up through are Democrats, and they've been put in these spots. And, you know, it's difficult because their politics lean a little left. And instead of being just a strict on the bench by the rule of law, they play politics with it very often.
One more thing here before we get you out of here, Pfizer reauthorization, and where are we on that? I guess you had a short-term extension kind of not make it through, but do you see a remedy there?
I think we just voted to extend it, so.
Yeah, I think
no.
It failed.
Okay, there's something going on. Yeah, okay. It failed. I didn't see the vote. I just knew we voted, but I didn't know it failed. I hadn't even looked up at the numbers. I ran and voted actually while you and I were on the phone. So you're saying it failed then? I don't know.
Yeah, it failed. And
unfortunately.
Yeah, so but you're a affirmative vote on this.
Yeah, just for a short-term extension because the president's kind of needing that. And so we were looking, I think, at a July 2nd extension, and I didn't know it failed. Like I said, I just voted on it. I assumed it might pass, but I guess we'll be back at the drawing board on this.
What is the hang-up there? Do you understand it? I mean, I kind of understand. I mean, you hear from the Massey's and the Rand Paul's, but, like, really, what are some of the hang-ups there?
I think it's a concern about warrantless searches and some oversight in the process of FISA. And look, the FBI abused it under the Biden administration. They abused it incredibly. Most of our intel folks did not, but FBI abused it. And so we're trying to put guardrails on it so that they can't search citizens without a warrant, you know, American citizens. But the issue you run into is you got Iran and 70% of the president's daily briefings. The intel that we're dealing with comes from that FISA stuff. And so we've got to figure out a way to allow it to be a tool to be used to spy on foreign actors, but not U.S. citizens. And so that's kind of the rub. And like I said, I thought we were going to extend it short term. I didn't realize it just failed. But yeah, we're trying to work through it, and we'll see. I mean, some of these guys are pushing for a warrant. I get that. But I think we have to figure out how to land the plane, and maybe with some oversight for sure, Jeff, because I voted no a couple of years ago because there was no warrant.
Congressman, we'll get you out of here. Folks want to find out more about your campaign in these closing days. How can they do so?
It's BarryMoreForAlabama.com. And if they want to see my military records, they can just click on In the News right there, Jeff. We've posted everything on there so the people can see my records. And so that'll be helpful for them, too, as well.
Barry Moore, ladies and gentlemen. Congressman, we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Sweet potato pie, and I shut my mouth. Gone with the wind. There ain't nobody looking back again.
Hello, Kansas. Sweet Bill Palmer, let me thank you for your time. You work a 40-hour week for a living. Just to send it on down. Coal miner, let me thank you for your time. You work a 40-hour week for a living. Just to send it on down the line.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. April Murray Fogle. Coming up about 45 minutes, Sam Roberts in the 11 o'clock hour. Had kind of a big first hour here with Jay Mitchell and Barry Moore. Paul writes, I saw some of the video. Wait, that's not for this. See, I like how the ads are aimed at. I can't say that on air. We need someone to make the ally Akbar their butts, though. Mike writes, see, Sheriff's Department is subject to the Constitution first and foremost. I'm not a fan of requiring sheriffs to cooperate with federal agencies. It's not a step far from ICE cooperation to other agencies like FBI, ATF, IRS. Which were definitely weaponized under Biden and will be again. And that's another reason I won't vote for Ala Akbar Mitchell. John writes, I would like to have a few Democrats on hand in Alabama so we won't get screwed out of federal dollars for various projects that are necessary. Well, John, the problem is it's not as if Terry Sewell has been like that great. I think her one time she really did come through was during the Space Command fight up in Huntsville. But she's kind of let us down on a number of fronts as a Democrat for the state. And listen, this is why I was like always trying to like make good with Doug Jones. I thought, well, you know, if you're gonna try to do something for the state and not try to be like a shameless ideologue or a partisan, you know, I understand politics is the name of the game. But when that kind of overshadows everything, then, you know, then you're not really just playing the role of Democrat. You're just an activist. And the two things that I think that she really had promised on but underdelivered, I think the West Alabama corridor, trying to get money for that 4-lane road. I mean, you look at the other things, some of the sewer problems in Lowndes and Perry County. That's been a struggle. She's had to go to Adderholt for that. And then the other one, she had told the delegation that not to worry about this 5-2 stuff, not to worry about Eric Holder. She was going to handle it. She did not want the legislature to dilute her district. Her district was her district. And it was set up for a Terry Sewell type candidate to win. And let me explain to you why. It's not so much about Republican Democrat. It's about Democrat on Democrat. She wanted a congressional district that had just enough of Birmingham, but the entirety of the Black Belt, because she is more of a creature of the Black Belt than she is of Birmingham. Now, yes, she resides in Hoover. claims Birmingham as her home, but she's from Selma. And the vote there, her two places where she has the highest proportion of Democrat voters are Dallas County and Perry County. And she wanted, yes, the benefit of having the majority-minority district, which would require Birmingham, but she didn't want a strong Birmingham Democrat, a Woodfin type of opponent in a Democrat primary defeating her. And that's why her district got drawn as it was. Does that make sense? We could get more into that on the other side. Stick around. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one can change my mind, but Mama tried.